on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk, our November 16th edition of InvestTalk. And first off, I'd like to give my condolences to the families that were affected by the attacks in France over the weekend. Terrible events, and even more terrible for the families that were affected. And it's going to be very interesting to see how this affects foreign policy, if war breaks out because of this, how this affects oil. This could have pretty wide-ranging ramifications over the medium and long term. So it'll be pretty interesting, but ultimately you kind of have to focus short term on those families that were affected. Now, we are here to help you make the most out of your money when you save it, invest it, spend it. However, we can help you do more of that, except for spending, right? You want to do less spending, or at least save when you do spend. And today we're going to talk more about funding your retirement with dividends and how that strategy works and what are ways that you should be cautious. And we're going to get to this. And it kind of is a good segue into our conference, our webinar that's coming up on Thursday. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the program. Now, every day we talk about sound investing principles, the fundamentals. And I'm not just talking about fundamentals of a company or economy, the fundamentals of investing. And we always try to preach starting large, starting broad, starting big, understanding the bigger picture, and then drilling down into the details. So many people get caught up in minutiae and details, and they aren't looking at the bigger picture. Now, since the events of the past Friday in Paris, we have all been immersed in talk about the tragedy, and Investopedia published a piece by certified financial advisor Elvis Picardo, and it considers terrorism in financial as well as human terms. And he writes, no matter where a major terrorist attack occurs in the world, the feelings it elicits when one hears of it are universal revulsion, shock, dread, and uncertainty. And markets don't like uncertainty. They detest uncertainty, which is why there's a lot of knee-jerk reaction in markets to terrorist attacks initially. But markets have proved enormously resilient over the years, because they tend to be short-term. Now, this could spark something that is more long-term, but it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Now, according to the IMF, researchers who research these type of acts of terrorism say that they inflict direct and indirect economic costs. And the direct economic costs are short-term in nature, meaning less travel, more responses from emergency service providers, more spending on infrastructure and systems to help combat terrorism. And then there's also indirect costs of terrorism. And that can be significantly larger as they affect the economy in the medium term by undermining confidence, less spending, staying at home more, things like that. Now, terrorism can also have long-term costs by reducing productivity because of increased security measures, higher insurance premiums, and increased costs of financial and other counter-terrorism regulations. And we just see that from our own Homeland Security here. It's a huge bureaucracy, a lot of wasted government spending, but it makes us all feel safe. And I'm sure to a certain extent it's helped thwart some attacks, but it's also been a drag on productivity and increased our debt and all types of things. So to appreciate just one aspect of these costs, consider the billions of hours expended by millions of passengers in airport security lines over the years since 9/11. So that slows everything down, costs a lot. Now, looking forward, another is to the worst case scenario is a major attack here in the United States. Obviously, that would be a global shock and send probably markets tumbling. Now, while France is a decent-sized economy and it's a major economy within Europe, you know, it's not America, the biggest economy in the world. Now, the global economy could fall into recession if the U.S. had some prolonged struggle because of, you know, this threat. So that's something to think about as well. Now, the bottom line, since 9/11, terrorism has reemerged as a potential threat that we didn't really think about before 9/11. Now, based on the reaction of equity indices in past terror attacks, after the initial drop, usually there's some stabilization, and you get back to market fundamentals. Now, today, there really wasn't really a negative effect early in the session, but pretty much we were up most of the day. Now, you can read the entire article today on the homepage of investopedia.com if you want to read more about how terrorism might affect us a little bit more. Now, what money questions are on your mind today? Let's hear from you. We are here to help. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. So let's take this question now from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, my name's Matt. I listen to you guys out in Chicago on my way to work this morning. My question was, I believe natural gas is at a relative low, and I was wondering if there are any ETFs or mutual funds that can diversify my investment into natural gas as opposed to buying just one stock. Thanks. Bye.
There is an ETF. Let me find it. I know there's an ETF. Yeah, FCG. FCG, I believe, is the symbol. Let me take a quick look at this. I know I have it on a watch list at the office. Yeah, it's FCG. That's the symbol of the natural gas ETF that owns natural gas companies. So that's probably what you want to be. FCG is the symbol if you want to take a look at that. So hopefully that answered your question. Now let's take a quick look at the markets today. We had the Dow up 238 points, a pretty good day. It was not the best index though. The S&P was actually up 30 points. That was about 1.5%. The NASDAQ kind of lagged the most. That was up 57 points, 1.16%. You had gold was up slightly. You had oil up slightly. It really wasn't, you know, considering what happened on Friday, it was not as dramatic as you would expect. The futures last night were pretty wild and they were down. But we really rallied throughout the day. So it was actually kind of a nice positive up day. On the economic front, you had the Empire State Manufacturing Index was negative again, negative 10 point something, which is still pretty poor. And it's been that way for many months now. It came in at negative 11.36. And that's 3 months in a row that it's been down over 11, by down over, you know, 10 or 11 points on the negative side, which is very, very negative. For example, back in 2008 and 9, you know, we were at negative 10, negative 32 at the peak on the Empire Manufacturing General Business Conditions Index. And this is a pretty broad index of the northeastern region. And really, the weakness has to do with the strong dollar. That's why it hasn't super negative. You know, it's not that 30 level that we were back in the last recession, but it's certainly not strong. So that was really the big economic news out today beyond just the terrorist attacks in France. Now, a talking point today is about using dividend stocks to pay for retirement. So we're going to discuss that a little bit. What are the opportunities and pitfalls and things that you should look out for? And so I want to get to that. I also want to talk a little bit more about, if you are an income seeker, what mistakes should you avoid? Getting a little bit deeper into this subject, and more broadly, even if you're not in retirement. You know, our main talking point is about dividends and retirement. I'm just going to talk about income more broadly. And then income versus total return. I'm really going to focus on the income side for this hour. Income versus total return. They're not as different as you would expect. And I'm going to touch on that and why. And then investment bank stocks. Is now a good time? And when is a good time to invest in them? So we're going to touch on those as well. Now, coming up this Wednesday, the webinar that you wanted in our survey, many wanted more information on building a strong portfolio and finding strong dividend paying stocks. So join Steve and myself this Wednesday, November 18th from 6:30 p.m. for this 1 hour free webinar, and you can register now on investtalk.com.
Hey guys, it's John from Phoenix. I had a question for you. I have 100 shares of both GoPro and Fitbit at $40 a share each, and I was buying and holding for the long term. That was my goal, but both of them are tumbling down. I know Fitbit's strong, and it has huge earnings, and it beats its earnings out of the park. I know GoPro's having some problems right now, and hopefully they can get it turned around. But what do you think of those two stocks, GoPro and Fitbit, and whether I should hold them for the long term or should just get rid of them and move on? Thanks for your help, and have a nice day.
All right, he's looking at two recent IPOs. Fitbit went IPO in June, and GoPro went IPO, when was it? GPRO. There it is. That one IPO last year, last June. So both recent IPOs, and he's down pretty significantly on both. He said $40 a share on both. GoPro is now at 21, and Fitbit is at 28. So, but this is a good example of, great example actually, of why you don't get caught up in the hype. Neither one of these stocks had the proper value to be buying. Even at today's levels, they're expensive. Okay? And they're in the technology space, which historically is a very difficult industry to maintain a lead in, because there's so many competitors coming after you. And they're a gadget maker. They make gadgets. GoPro's camera gadgets, Fitbit's, you know, workout gadgets. And there needs to be some sort of moat that we talk about, competitive advantage that makes them so much stronger long term. And there's certain small things about both companies that are attractive long term. But are they going to be able to defend their position in the marketplace from competitors? Does GoPro have a special sauce on portable, durable cameras? Not really, I don't think. China has duplicated their products pretty well at a much lower price. Same with Fitbit. You have Apple, you have all these other, you have Jawbone, you have a lot of competitors, even though Fitbit might be the strongest. So neither of them, I think, are good values or good long-term plays. There's way too much risk, and I need a much deeper discount. And this is a perfect example how you don't chase story stocks and IPOs. Now, our Invest Talk anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I want to hear from you. What is on your mind? I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to talk to you at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast, Your First Steps Toward Financial Freedom. That's our talking point for Tuesday's podcast. We hope you'll be listening then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, let's talk a little bit about using dividend stocks to pay for retirement. Now, dividend stocks provide a stream of income as well as the potential for capital gains. right? Which is not really the case for bonds or preferred stocks. I mean, obviously, if you buy them at discounts, etc., you could have some capital gains, but generally, you don't have that upside potential. But stocks inherently carry a lot more risk than savings accounts, certificates of deposit, and bonds. And why is that? Well, first off, dividends can stop at any time. Dividends are approved by the board of a company to its shareholders. However, if profits decline, the company falls on hard time, well, that dividend can be decreased. It can be eliminated altogether. Whereas that isn't really the case for bonds and most fixed income products, right? So if the companies you're investing in have a bad year, not only will the stock decline, but your payout might also decline as well. So understanding how strong that dividend is very, very important. Now, the flip side of that is you could have an increase in the dividend payout as well, unlike a bond or a preferred stock, I mean, most bonds, shall I say, and growth over time. And that's something that is important. So there's the upside and the downside of dividend paying stocks. Can be cut and it can actually go up as well. And over time, that's very, very powerful if you can find stocks that can grow their dividend payout over time. Number two, diversification difficulties. Now, most companies that pay high current dividend yields are concentrated in just a few industries. Think telecom, think utilities, think master limited partnerships, think REITs. You know, those are just a few that have high current dividends. And many investors exclusively invest in just a handful of industries that pay high dividends because that's where they can get their 4, 5, 6+% yields. But the problem is it's difficult to make a truly diversified portfolio of stocks with high current yields with just those few industries. We think you need to have at least 8 different industries in your portfolio. And maybe it's difficult. Maybe you can't find a 4 or 5 percenter in every industry. Maybe you're going to have to settle for a 2 or 3 percenter. But it'll make your portfolio safer, more diversified. It might also get you into areas that have more growth over time. And that company that today might yield 2 or 3% might appreciate and also increase its dividend many years from now. Okay? And then dividends are less volatile, but they aren't risk-free. They carry more risk than high-quality bonds. Most people say, you know, a high-quality investment-grade bond fund is yielding, you know, 4%. Well, that's not a lot. I don't got upside either. So I'm going to go into stocks. But you have to understand the business landscape that they're operating in, competition. And investing in any single stock always carries a higher risk of something going wrong with the company. Stocks that have done extremely well for decades can decline because they're innovated away, creative destruction. Okay? So understanding those aspects is extremely important when you're looking at investing in dividends for the long term. Let's get back to the phone. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now with any money questions. We're here for you.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I had a question to see what your thoughts are on investing in dividend-paying ETFs in a traditional IRA. I was looking at Vanguard Growth ETF, VUG, or else the Vanguard Dividend Appreciation, VIG. So wanted to see if those would be good vehicles to use for my traditional IRA. And I'm going to be in a low tax bracket, so just wanted to see what your thoughts are on that. Thank you.
Well, if you're in you're looking to invest in a traditional IRA, what your tax bracket you're in today shouldn't really matter based on what you're putting it in, because there's no tax consequences of dividends, capital gains, etc. So don't worry about that. But you're looking at VUG and VIG, both good vehicles. VUG is a growth ETF. It's only yielding 1%, 1.25% or so. So you're not going to get a lot of dividend out of that. VIG, I do like, dividend appreciation fund, yields about 2.3%, which might not seem like a lot, but it does invest in companies that tend to increase their dividend over time. And so if I was going to pick one or the other, I would be going with VIG. Now we've reached the halfway mark in the hour. A quick reminder that you can see Steve's dates for individual retirement reviews right there on investtalk.com. He'll be in La Jolla December 2nd and then San Ramon December 9th. And it's first come, first serve. So go to investtalk.com, click on schedule a meeting.
As we get back to InvestTalk, a reminder to register for our free InvestTalk webinar. It's coming up this Wednesday, November 18th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Building a strong portfolio with less risk and finding strong dividend-paying stocks. Get your free link to the webinar right now on InvestTalk.com.
Let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
Good. How are you today?
Great. What can I do for you?
I wanted to ask about stock ticker symbol CAB, Cabela's, particularly to see how that might play as a potential Christmas rally stock. If I were to pick it up at this last portion of the year, might I see a decent rise in it?
Well, this is a tough one because it's a retailer, and they operate 64 outdoor equipment stores in 31 states in Canada. And they sell things like camping gear, fishing gear, you know, outdoor products. Earnings are falling. Revenues are only growing in the mid-single-digit range. They have a lot of debt. They don't pay a dividend. And technically, if you look at the chart, nothing tells me that this is going to have a substantial rally. Now, if it can get above the 45 level, which is about 10%, from here, then I think maybe it could make its way back up to its highs earlier than in the year, which was at about 58 or so. But it's got to clear that hurdle first. It's in a clear downtrend, making lower highs, lower lows. So technically, there's really nothing about it that makes me say, oh yeah, this should get a Christmas rally, and especially because of a look at the retailers. Retailers just really started to take it on the chin recently because of the results from Macy's and the like. And I don't think they're going to get off the mat anytime soon because I don't think the maximum pessimism is there yet. So I think they're going to continue to struggle just like the industrials have and the transport stocks as well. They're all not doing so hot, and I don't think the retailers are going to have much more than a dead cat bounce.
Okay, thank you.
No problem, James. Thanks for calling. So, no, I would not be buying Cabela's for a Christmas rally. Now, let's talk a little bit about four mistakes to avoid if you're seeking income. One big mistake I think people make is they try to use bonds as they try to go out in the risk spectrum using money and cash that they need in the short term. And that makes sense because if you think about it, it seems like a long time ago. Back in 2007, which is only 8 or 9 years ago, CDs were yielding 3%, high quality bonds were yielding 5-6% plus. And you can get decent yields with not a ton of risk. But now, in today's low-yield environment, it has nudged everyone out on the risk spectrum. And some investors who might normally hold bonds as a way to seek income have embraced stocks. And while stocks generally are liquid, they can go down in value pretty rapidly. Just look at what happened in late August, September. And so if you need cash in the short term, talking 6 months, a year, don't be trying to get cute and say, oh, well, I'm going to go and buy this ETF because it's yielding 1.5% or 2% versus, you know, 0.5% or in money market. Just keep it in money market, keep it in cash equivalents so that you can get to it. True that high quality short-term bond funds, they may not go down a lot even if the market gets disrupted, but you could still lose some of your principal, and that might be principal you need. So don't get cute is really the story. So many people are trying to chase that extra few percentage points without understanding what type of risk they're taking on by just going out for that extra little bit of yield. Then number two, kind of ties into understand your risks. Now, of recent years, one good example of this is mass limited partnerships. A lot of them yield 5, 6, 8, 10%, some of them. And a lot of income seekers were gravitating towards them. A, not understanding the risks. B, not understanding the tax consequences. Because they thought they were getting a higher level of income than were available to most stocks and bonds, right? But if you look at any mass limited partnership index, look at the AMLP is a good example of it. This hit a high of, this is an ETF that holds a basket of mass limited partnerships. This is a high of, hit a high of $19 and change middle of last year and hit a low of $12 earlier this year. Now it's at about $13. So it's gone down dramatically. And this is a good example of how investors didn't understand the risk. Some MLPs are very sensitive to the direction of energy prices. And this applies to other areas like REITs, utilities. There are other risks that maybe they're not rearing their ugly head today, but they are risks that you are taking by looking for that yield. So having a diversified portfolio is extremely important when you're deciding on how to build a portfolio. And that's what we're going to talk about on Wednesday in our webinar, is what are those risks, how you should diversify, how do you know if you're diversified, and how to align it with what your needs are as well. Let's go to Daniel in Palo Alto. How you doing, Daniel?
Hi, Justin, for your time. Listen to you on 1220 every day.
Awesome.
I may have asked you about once before with Netflix. Mm-hmm. Do I wait for it to break out? It was up 6% today. Kind of, do I wait for it to go back down again?
Well, what's your timer? Are you looking for the buy this long term, a trade? What are you thinking?
Right, long term.
Long term, I wouldn't even touch it. There's nothing fundamentally that makes me like Netflix. The numbers are god awful, except for revenues. Profitability is declining. Debt is increasing. Cash flows are decreasing. Sure, subscribers are up, revenues up, but it's been at a giant cost. And they're in an environment that there are competitors, and there's going to be more and more competitors as we go on, as the cable model is broken. And sure, Netflix will benefit, but that's where everyone's put their money. But I don't think people are realizing that money, when the cable model is broken, is either A, going to just not be spent on these type of things, entertainment, but it's also going to spread to different networks that are coming up with over-the-air options. In Amazon Prime, Apple is going to probably come out with something eventually. And Netflix has a $47 billion market cap. And they have negative free cash flow. They only do $6 billion in sales. So you're telling me I'm gonna pay 8x earnings for a company whose cash flows are falling?
I hear you.
Whose net income's falling?
They're still got competition.
They still got competition, and there's way too much hype. And I would not be touching Netflix.
Okay. Have you got one more question about Ford or not?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh yeah, I was thinking about shorting Ford just for several reasons, but.
Okay. I wouldn't mind shorting Ford. I'd say near term, there's probably some upside to it. Just because you've hit some support areas. But I would short Ford if it gets back up to about $15 a share. Now it's at 14.
Okay.
So give it about a buck upside potential. And if it gets there, then I'd short it.
I hear you. Thank you, man.
No problem. Thanks for the call, Daniel. That was Netflix and Ford. Now, a reminder that our InvestTalk premium newsletter goes out to our subscribers every single Friday, and we give you a summary of the week's market moves and economic news that came out and what it means and what our strategy is going forward. We give you at least 2 stock picks and to put on your watch list to at least look at. We focus in on portfolio management skill and factors to consider when you're looking at investing. And every week, we also try to help you make better choices with our Consumer Watch segment, which helps you save money on everyday money needs and topics. Now, if you'd like to try it for a month, there is a money-back guarantee. Just sign up. Just go to investtalk.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial. Take a look at select growth and income programs, handpicked mutual funds for flexibility, strength, and diversity. And to find out more about any or all of KPP's investment programs, click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com.
Let's talk a little bit. Let's get to the last 2 points of risks or mistakes to avoid if you're an income seeker. Now, so I talked a little bit about liquidity and making sure that if there's cash that you need, you're not putting it in. They're not getting cute with trying to find a little bit extra yield. Then I also talked about understanding the risk that you're taking. And 3 is diversification. I mean, we talked a little bit about mass limit partnerships and how much they've gone down. But it's important to have income producers in different sectors, a lot of different sectors. Even when the economy isn't so great, what sectors will do okay? And vice versa. You don't want to have drag performance when the market's going up just because you're focused on income. And you want to have those companies that have some sort of growth potential. So having that balance between dividend growers and high current payers is very, very important and will give you a better total return over the long term. And then 4 is neglecting the drag of taxes. Now today, you don't really see the real big problem with taxes because the yields are so low. Right? If you're in a 25% tax bracket and you're getting 1% on a short-term bond fund, it's not that much. But when yields start to rise again, you're starting to get decent yields, those tax consequences could be big. And that's why we say if you have dividend payers, you want to put those in your tax-deferred account, think an IRA, Roth IRA, 401k, etc. And then your growth names in a taxable account, and then you can manage how you take those gains over time and when you sell them, when you take that capital gain, right? So those are 4 little tips, I guess I could give you if you aren't an income investor, and that it jives well with, like I said, our webinar coming up on Wednesday. We're going to talk about building a strong portfolio. What makes a good dividend paying stock? What are the factors you have to look at? What do you have to consider? Okay, so we're going to get into that, and it's free. If you want to sign up, just go to investtalk.com. Now it's time for Invest Talk Personal, the personal finance issues that can have a lasting impact on your lives. And this one is about the debts we leave behind. Now, have you ever thought about the debts you have once you die? Credit card debt may still be very much a large problem in this country, and it often looms large after someone dies. When someone dies, the estate pays the credit cards and other debts. But if there is more debt than the assets, the bank pretty much has to eat it. Now, if you're married and have credit card debt, and your spouse may be held responsible to pay off those debts upon your death if it's a joint account. Now, have you co-signed for someone? If that person dies with credit card debt, you'd be held responsible to pay it off. Some good advice is before any debts are paid off of an estate, including credit cards, you should always contact your attorney and figure out whether you're responsible for those debts. Now, what if your marriage dies? Now, if one spouse agrees to pay off a joint card as part of a divorce settlement, but if the ex doesn't do it or dies before the debt is paid and your name is still on the card, the credit card company may come looking for you. So if you have a settlement like that, you got to make sure it's done. Otherwise, they can still come after you. Now, furthermore, according to attorney Glenn Ayers, if you live in a community property state, California, you'd better hope you didn't receive community property in the divorce. The divorce judgment does not bind the credit card company. It's going to chase you. Okay? So don't think that you can just tell the credit card company that, oh, it was in the settlement and no. It's on you, so you got to make sure you double check everything. Now, let's Invest Talk Personal. And do you have questions about debt or building up your credit score? Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com or call us now at 888-99-CHART. That's how to reach me. Now, as we move into the final segment of Invest Talk for today, a reminder that if you're a podcast subscriber and you live too far from our California offices, Steve can meet with you via Skype or telephone. You can reserve your time by going to investtalk.com, clicking on the schedule a meeting button, or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Again, our next free webinar is coming up this week. Steve and Justin hope you'll join them for building a strong portfolio with less risk and finding strong dividend-paying stocks. The date is Wednesday, November 18th. The time is 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. It is free, and you can sign up right now on investtalk.com.
Hello, this is Dan from Knoxville, Tennessee. I had a quick question about whether it was what was going to be best to hold in a Roth IRA or traditional IRA versus just a taxable account. Is it better to hold stocks? I've always heard stocks in Roth or traditional IRA and ETFs or mutual funds in taxable accounts. I didn't really understand why that was so. The only thing I could figure out is the stocks or bonds or ETFs or whatever is traded more would be better in a tax-deferred or a tax-free account. But other than that, I didn't know which ones would be best. I'll wait to hear your answer on podcast. Appreciate what you do. Thanks. Bye.
Now, I do think ETFs are good in taxable accounts. Why? Because they're tax efficient. The way they operate, they're pretty tax efficient. Whereas mutual funds, they're not really tax efficient. So I think mutual funds are best in an IRA. Okay. Now, when it comes to individual stocks, there's a lot of theories behind this, which one you should be. Now, I think income-producing stocks, that you're getting consistent stream of income that you're going to have to, that is taxable income if it's not in an IRA, I think those should be in an IRA if you can. Let's say you shouldn't hold them in a taxable account. It's not the end of the world, especially if you're in a low tax bracket. But there's two ways to think about it, like I said. So for growth stocks, companies that maybe don't pay a dividend, I actually like those in a taxable account. And why is that? It's because you get to control when you pay the taxes on them. Now, the best thing would be just have it all in a non-taxable account, meaning an IRA or 401k. But if you had to, if I had to choose between the two, I would rather not have to worry about paying tax on that income every single year. And then at the end of, you know, long way out, I can manage my taxes on growth stocks or maybe small cap ETF, something that can grow very well over the long term. So everyone's situation is a little bit different. Depends on your tax bracket, depends on your needs, if you're in retirement, what your time horizon is. But it is something definitely to consider if you are, if you have both types of accounts. Now, this whole show, I've been talking a little bit about, or talking a lot about income and the pitfalls, but also there's certainly opportunities and ways to diversify yourself, etc. But I want to talk a little bit about total return. And I think it's something that everyone should be thinking about. So many people are focused on income. And it really boxes people in to a certain line of thinking. And at the end of the day, we all want to have total return. We want to have good total return. Certainly the right volatility, but total return matters. I think everybody would rather take 8 to 10% return over a 5% or 6% consistent dividend every year. Right? And so many people are focused on the short term, what is it yielding today? And they're not focused on the longer term total return of their portfolio. And that's really what you should do. You should combine the current income, but also find companies that can grow. Dividend growth is most important. So many people focus on what is it yielding today, but really most important, the most powerful aspect to good dividend investing is actually how much will that dividend grow over time. You will do much better investing in a company that yields 2% today but grows its dividend 5 to 10% per year for the next 15 years than a company that yields 5% today and doesn't grow its dividend over the next 15 years. You'll do far better. So understanding total return in context and how to combine the two is much more powerful than just chasing yield, and you'll have a more diversified portfolio as well. So I've been trying to urge people for many couple years now to try to really take current yield with a grain of salt and understand the investment in context. Now we're out of time for the session. I thank you for investing this hour with me. If you have a question about the program or anything we discussed this hour, you can reach me directly. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the contact Justin button, and I will get back to you. We'll go straight to my email box. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.